What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktail recipes. Created by us, your favorite podcasters and all-around weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, and Blackwell's. Or just head to nofspodcast.com/go for the links.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Join us!
For some, the sea is not a place. It is a calling, a home away from home. If you find yourself drawn to the water, we can take you there. Imagine you, your friends, and family on a private yacht in the most beautiful places in the world, from the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands to Greece, Italy, Tahiti, and beyond. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings, and it's easier than you think. Inquire today. Your next great vacation begins at moorings.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And this week we're taking you back to the summer of 2016. Oh, what a fun time that was. Let me paint a picture for you. Let me bring you back. It was the summer that Hulk Hogan took Gawker to the courtroom. Do you remember this?
No.
Over his sex tape? It was also, according to Google here, the year that we lost David Bowie and Prince.
Oh.
What
oh.
a bad year.
The day the music died.
Really? Oh, it was just such a terrible time. We had the all-female Ghostbusters. We had Batman versus Superman. We also had Deadpool, but more importantly, we had a movie that rocked the earth when it came out. A new original movie from Fede Alvarez, who had previously made the Evil Dead remake. This week, we're talking about Don't Breathe, one of the most stressful movie-watching experiences Kim has ever had in her
yeah,
entire life.
When you say rock the earth, you mean rock the horror community.
It's the one movie that made a simple household item that you see every Thanksgiving turned to a fucking evil implementation of terror.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, I hadn't watched this movie since we saw it in theaters because it fucking traumatized me. This film, on top of the fact that it's outlandish and wild and it fucking goes there,
God, I love it.
Is unrelenting. And that's going to be,
yeah.
It's going to be my double-edged sword, my first good thing about this movie. If you haven't seen Don't Breathe, it goes. It boogies. It grabs your attention minute one and it doesn't let go, and it will not let go.
No, as soon as you get a handle on what's happening, they pull the rug out from underneath you. We got something else even more fucked up that's going on top of this. It's a movie that raises the stakes in a way that movies just don't raise stakes anymore.
Yeah, and anytime you think somebody's getting out, somebody's had even a little win, they get shot or punched in the face immediately.
Okay, so that's good thing number one. Good thing number two, heist gone wrong. It's one of my favorite fucking things in a horror movie where a heist goes wrong, especially if they're heisting Dracula. Like, bonus points if what you're trying to steal is Dracula's body, and then it goes horribly wrong. Now, that is one very specific movie that I'm talking about, but I love a heist gone wrong. We've talked about it before in the podcast, recently, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we did it with Abigail.
Exactly. Anytime that you have, also kind of a Dracula movie, anytime that you have a group of thieves or robbers that are trying to pull off some sort of con job, and then all of a sudden, they don't realize who they fucked with. That's my shit.
Yeah, robbers getting more than they bargained for is such an odd subgenre to exist, but it does, and I love it.
It's brilliant. It totally justifies why you can't just call the cops and get the fuck out of there.
It's also a great cat and mouse game where you really play with morality of characters and you don't know who to root for at which point in time.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that on top of how tense the situation is, like you're pulling off a heist, you're pulling off a robbery, you're trying to steal from somebody, you also have that added layer of who am I following, who am I rooting for?
Yeah.
In this movie, just fucking, oh God.
One of my favorite things, like we're absolutely going to get into that. It's the cornerstone of what I love about this movie so fucking much. But what's good thing number three?
Good thing number three, maybe this is an underrated good thing.
Okay.
The cinematography in this movie is so fucking good.
That was my thing too. I was like, how do I say cinematography without just being like, without saying cinematography? Like, you can't show it on an audio podcast, but goddamn.
Yeah, like, you know this dark claustrophobic movie with a blind man? Yeah, the cinematography is great.
The cinematography is amazing. It's like sequences from Panic Room.
I was gonna say, it's very reminiscent of Panic Room in that we are going through scenes with the camera. It's sweeping up the stairs and down the stairs and around the corner and up the hall. The camera itself is sneaking through the house. And also, too, as much as you are a fan of heist gone wrong movies, I love Detroit horror movies.
Okay.
It is the perfect setting for a horror movie. It's got amazing production value, and it costs you no money because there's so many communities that are graveyards. It's so perfect to relay tone and isolation and, you know, like the death of the American dream, and there's fun capitalism things to be said there.
Yeah.
But it's such a good setting for horror.
Yeah, and if we hadn't have already talked about Barbarian at length on the podcast not too long ago, like when it came out, we'd probably be pairing it with Barbarian. I think Kim still wants me.
Let's
talk about it again. I think we got a real fun, like, we're talking about the summer of 16. If Barbarian had come out in 2016, then absolutely, but it sure didn't, and we're not. But yeah, the cinematography in this movie, fucking incredible. Yeah, it's shot by Pedro Luque, who also did The Society of the Snow, which you probably heard about at the Oscars this year. He's worked with Fede Alvarez before. Here's the most interesting thing, though. One, he shot Don't Breathe 2, which, I gotta tell you, that movie does not get as much love as it should. That movie's fucking incredible. But he's worked with Fede Alvarez before. His writer and producer, was it Rodo Sayegas, I think is his name? He went on to direct Don't Breathe 2. This is what I'm super excited for. And this is just a little pin I'm going to drop here. We don't have to talk about it later. But Pedro Luque did additional directing on Alien Romulus, which I think means that he's going to direct his debut feature soon, probably produced by Fede Alvarez. I cannot fucking wait to see what this guy comes up with. A movie that he's directed, having been such an accomplished cinematographer, is going to look incredible. Some of your, you don't know this, but some of your favorite movies of all time have come from some incredible cinematographers.
I believe you.
Okay. I didn't mean to, like, kill the podcast dead right there, but you wanted to talk about cinematography, and I think this the cinematographer in this movie is great, and I don't think this is the last time we've heard from him. I think he's going to direct a feature soon. I haven't heard anything, but I know it's coming.
What if you find out he doesn't like horror movies, and it's a rom-com, and he's...
It's going to be the most... slick rom-com you've ever seen in your life. I don't give a fuck what he does. It's gonna look so sharp.
Was he involved with the Evil Dead remake
at
all?
He was not.
Oh, okay.
No, but so here's the thing about that. That cinematographer, also, I wouldn't be surprised, it becomes a director soon. He shot the Evil Dead. He shot the first Omen. He shot No One Will Save You. Like, this guy, that cinematographer is amazing. And yeah, if they become directors, they're going to be unstoppable.
All right, well, now we've got the hot jive and the future of cinema.
Well, TLDR, Three Good Things About Don't Breathe, if you haven't seen it before, it's going to give you an anxiety attack. It's got an incredible heist gone wrong, and it looks fucking amazing. Watch this movie at midnight if you can, because most of it's in darkness. It plays with darkness in a really interesting way. But we're going to toss the trailer, and when we come back, we're going to get into why Kim has refused to watch this movie until today.
Your lips look sore. That's how you're making your cash out there?
What do you say you and I move away from Mom together? It's a promise.
You're leaving?
Yeah, as soon as I have the money.
When are you coming back?
Never.
Yo, I got our ticket out of here. Rumor is this guy is sitting on at least 300K. Boom!
That's her guy.
Wait, is he blind?
We messed up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's insane, bro.
Guys, money's probably in there.
Who's there?
Stay right there.
How many of you are there?
Just me, man, all right? Just let me go, please. Okay, I swear to God.
He's coming.
Now you're gonna see what I see.
Don't Breathe is currently sitting at a 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb, 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Wow, the critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes is higher than the audience rating. The audience only gave it 79%.
That's interesting, because it feels like this is a movie for movie fans, because it really subverts expectations and it doesn't play with formula the way you expect.
It's a crowd pleaser. Okay, well, this is a movie that is made for an audience. I'll say that. Because the same way A Quiet Place like just ratchets up tension because nobody talks or anything, all of those moments in this movie where people are skulking around, you start holding your breath because you're like on the edge of your seat with them. And when you have a whole room of people doing that and you can hear a pin drop, that's cinema.
A Quiet Place is such a good reference in tandem with this film because that's this very similar theatrical experience I had in both films, was that uncomfortable to even make a sound in your chair.
And I think that is like one of the biggest praises you could give this movie. It's so funny to me because, like, just based on how uncomfortable it makes you, that just shows how much of a success this was.
No, and that's why it was one of my good things about how tense this film is.
Yeah.
It is tense the entire way through, and it doesn't let up.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it a very hard watch for me personally. I had a much better experience watching it at home, though,
In the safety and comfort of your own couch.
Yeah, because I could, like, hang out with the dog, and we could, like, take little visual breaks from the movie.
There's also a couple sequences that, if they are surprises, there's no escaping them. And at home, yeah, you know what's coming, and you can turn your eyes away from the screen
There were some moments that I chose not to watch.
Okay, so this movie, it's a very limited cast, because it's a self-contained single-location movie. We've got three main characters. They're all thieves. They're kids trying to get out of Detroit. We've got Rocky, who's our lead, played by Jane Levy from the Evil Dead remake. We've got her boyfriend, Money, who I don't know if you remember is the kid next door in It Follows.
But you know, is it?
Yeah, you just don't recognize him in this
because he's like
a wannabe gangster. Yeah, that's totally him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, another fellow Detroit resident, I guess, at least cinematically. And then also Alex, who we'll all remember from 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, you know, he's...
And The Open House. Those classic Netflix properties.
He was in the Scream remakes.
Oh, that's right.
Or the Scream requels or whatever. What is it? Dylan Minnette, or I think is his name?
Yeah, Dylan Minnette.
I read recently that he just retired, like, he's retired from
acting.
He's
retired from acting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe it just wasn't his passion, but he was in a lot of things. Like, he was in a bunch of horror movies. He did some TV, like, he was a lot of Netflix projects.
He's in an American alternative rock band called Wallows.
Okay.
All right, so he's just focusing on music now. Yeah, and they break into the wrong fucking house. You know, they've been doing these small jobs. Alex, his dad, works for a security company. He's basically been using that info and the keys that he keeps on hand to break into these houses, stealing less than 10 grand at a time, so it's not grand larceny. Just, you know, trying to be smart about the crimes that they're pulling. Unfortunately, they're not making a ton of money doing that. Because
you're selling stolen goods to criminals, so you're not getting a very great rate on it.
Yeah. Oh, you think that you can go into crime because the tax rate on your income check is so high? Like, guess what? The criminals are taking a bigger cut. Maybe just as big of a cut. And classic heist style, they come across one big score. It's the final job. It's the last one we have to do. After this, we're off, sailing off into the sunset toward California. That's the goal. It's always California, right? Everybody heads to the coast.
People want to live in the sun, John. Some of us need vitamin D.
If you're landlocked in Michigan, sure, then yeah, I guess the beach makes the most sense. Anyway, that's the whole goal. And like Rocky has the added incentive that her mom's an alcoholic. She's dating some fucking skinhead in a trailer park, and she just wants to get her sister out of there. So that's what her motivation. Alex is obsessed with Rocky, so he sticks around. Money.
Yeah, he's friend zoned. Like,
oh, yeah.
Definitely, they grew up on the same street, went to school together, and he's been in love with her since they were four.
Yeah, but she's more interested in money. That's the dynamic.
In money?
yeah. And so that's the dynamic. So the three of them decide they're going to break into this blind guy's house because they hear that he's got $1 million stashed away somewhere. It's a
$300,000.
Okay, $300,000. They find out later that it's $1 million. Like, it's way more than $300,000.
He probably got paid off good by the government if he got blinded in the military.
That's what it seems like, yeah. Or maybe he was a mercenary, right? And he was like,
he
doing
was
some
definitely
shady black ops stuff.
Yeah, he was definitely something.
He had a to-go bag. His whole house is booby-trapped. He's blind, and he's a fucking killing machine.
Okay, so we do need to take this little moment to take a Stephen Lang break.
Okay.
One, we need to credit the makeup. The eye effects look
so good.
So good.
Amazing.
He looks like a fish. You know how
fish's
eyes are so weird and they reflect light weird?
Yeah.
They look realistic. And in the sequence when he turns the light off in the basement,
mm-hmm.
Terrifying.
Right, yeah, like we're sort of semi-night vision goggle.
Yes.
It's very dark.
Very Silence of the Lambs,
yeah.
Grease in the Basement.
Yeah, a photo negative version of the Silence of the Lambs, because it's more of like a gray and a black instead of like full-ass green.
Yeah, and everybody's pupils look so fucking cool, because everybody's just in pitch black.
Yeah.
But Stephen Lang is ripped! As soon as they saw him and those arm muscles, they should have been like, we have to get out.
We have to leave.
He's just doing pull-ups alone in his kitchen.
Okay, so I had I thought you wanted to take a break to talk about how much of a badass Stephen Lang was. Once you started talking about the eyes and stuff, I was like, oh, maybe not. I guess she doesn't really give a shit. But yeah, we've talked about Stephen Lang on this podcast before. He's in a million movies.
He's a beast.
Okay, yes, he's a beast.
I'm just saying, like, I love a Silver Fox action star. I was trying to think of the most complimentary way to say old man action star.
Uh-huh.
Like, he gets a discount at the movies he stars in. Tom Cruise is almost at that point.
I think Tom Cruise is at that point. But he's paying full price for that ticket. One, because he doesn't want to admit to himself how old he is. And also, he's doing it for Hollywood. Every dollar goes back into the system.
But even in Don't Breathe 2, like, he is just killing it.
Yeah.
Like, I love the little resurgence in his career that he's had with these, like, more starring, crazy, bonkers roles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's in the Avatar movies. He was in VFW, that Joe Bigos movie. He's killing it in that movie. Lots of exploding heads in that movie. And yeah, he's a monster in this. He's unstoppable. Now, the great thing about his character is that he's the victim in the beginning of the movie. Like, we have these shitheads who are they're our anti-heroes. We're following them. They're not likable characters, in a sense. Like, they're thieves. We see the conditions that they're in and what's led Rocky to become a criminal, so we side with her. And we're like, okay, well, we'll let you do this. But ultimately, the blind man, which is his only credit in the movie, we're kind of supposed to be on his side at the beginning of the movie, if you know nothing.
Well, the cold open is pretty dark because we start bird's eye view of Detroit, really great visual of this decaying residential neighborhood, and we slowly drone in and we see him dragging Rocky down the middle of the street.
We don't see him doing it. We just see somebody doing it. We don't know that it's him. Maybe we didn't watch the trailer before we sat down to see the movie.
Okay.
Anyway, so he's on the good guy side because he's just an innocent civilian.
And he's a blind veteran.
He's a blind veteran whose daughter has died. You know, he's got so much going against him here, and we're gonna steal from him? This isn't nice. This is just, he falls asleep watching old family footage of his daughter. Oh, what a sad man.
Ugh.
We're gonna steal from this guy? Oh, but he turns out to be an unstoppable killing machine. Like, he's insane. He wakes up. They think that they've knocked him out with some sort of, like,
water bottle gas.
Yeah, some sort of, like, water bottle, bought it from a van, gas. Like, don't worry, he's out like a light. He's up and around 30 seconds later.
He's like, why is my room all foggy?
the fog woke me up. I probably would have gone right back to sleep if it wasn't for this fog. You know, they're fairly quiet, except for Money, who's walking around using a crowbar, trying to yank open the locks.
He's very overconfident in his drugging abilities.
Yeah.
Because even the dog that they drugged was not drugged very long. Maybe an hour.
I'm going to credit them on that one because they didn't overly drug the dog and kill it. But he's up. He's about. He only hears Money. And at this point, also, Alex has decided to leave. He's out because Money's got a gun.
Yeah, Money brought a gun to the robbery. And he was like, nope, that amplifies this immediately.
Yeah.
Like, one, it's going to make this more of a crime. And two,
now it's armed robbery.
Yes, and two, it gives Stephen Lang, the blind man, justification to murder the trespassers.
Yeah, kill him on sight.
And he's proven right 30 seconds. As soon as the gun comes out and they're like, you shouldn't have brought a gun to this robbery, he learns that he shouldn't have brought a gun to this robbery.
Right, this is the real reason most people shouldn't own guns. It's because, statistically, you end up getting killed by your own gun. Like, if you're not the kind of person who, like, if you didn't go into military service, or you're not taking classes and just, like, learning how to use a gun, like, you're just like, oh yeah, no, as soon as I have a gun, everybody's gonna take me seriously. Everybody's gonna listen to what I have to say, because I'm scary now. Yeah, he gets that gun off of him and shoots him in his own goddamn face.
That's such a tense moment, too, because we know Stephen Lang is blind. He is being held at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Close range. Money and him are a meter apart. And he inches closer. And he's got his hands out, almost like he's, you know, white flag, relenting. He's like, okay, you got me.
Yeah,
but he's moving closer, and he's moving closer with his hands out.
But he's blind. Maybe he's just trying to feel around, right?
Yeah. But he's also playing on the fact that he can, almost like he can smell that Money isn't familiar with this gun.
He hasn't
shot this gun. He's not a murderer. He's not going to shoot him. It's such a tense little standoff. And he disables him immediately, and then he shoots him in the face.
Yeah. The key thing there, though, is that he asks him how many people are in the house. And he says that he's alone, and then he shoots him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, and his reaction afterward is brilliant. Like, especially if you're going into this sight unseen. He's so mad at himself for killing this kid. Like, he starts punching the walls. He's upset that he had to do this.
Well, it's also 2 a.m. and now he's got to fucking deal with a body.
You think he's upset because he's tired?
Maybe. He's slightly drugged. That's true. He probably just wants to go to bed.
We might be too old for free candy, but we're not going to let that stop us from having a ghoul time. This October, we're playing Trick or Treat with the Spirits of Halloween over in the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club at Patreon.
Each week, we're going to be pulling movies at random from our spooky Trick or Treat basket. It's a Halloween boo bucket from McDonald's. And we're either going to be given a treat, that's a horror movie we really want to talk about, or a trick, a horror movie we hoped we'd never have to discuss in public.
Join us as we let the spirit of Halloween take the wheel and play Trick or Treat with the Nightmare on Film Street podcast. You can find those episodes only at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Or patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
For some, the sea is not a place. It is a calling, a home away from home. If you find yourself drawn to the water, we can take you there. Imagine you, your friends, and family on a private yacht in the most beautiful places in the world, from the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands to Greece, Italy, Tahiti, and beyond. This is a yacht charter vacation with the Moorings, and it's easier than you think. Inquire today. Your next great vacation begins at moorings.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Yeah, nobody wants to have to deal with a body and murdering somebody. Like, it's just like, ugh, this is a world of shit I've invited. Especially when we realize that he probably doesn't want to have the cops come to his house.
Well, sure, but we don't know anything about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you know, like, he's left a life of violence. He came home blind, but at least I'm alive. I've still got my daughter to take care for. His daughter dies. Now he's got nothing. And so his entire life has just been ruined by violence.
He does
and
have
now
some...
he's like, oh, they try, every time I try and go out, they pull me back in.
He does have some interesting reactions, because a lot of this movie, the wool is pulled over the audience's eyes in terms of the full scope of the story.
Yeah. Now, they're trying to break into the basement because they can't find the money anywhere. This is the only spot in the house that's padlocked. Like, clearly he doesn't want anybody to go into the basement. And that's 100% true, because it becomes a cat and mouse game. Once he finds their boots, while he's trying to get rid of Money's body, he comes across their shoes, and now he knows that there are two other people in the house somewhere. And that's when he starts padlocking the doors, he's sealing the windows, he's trapping everybody inside.
That's also just a very scary scenario where you realize you have underestimated your target.
Yeah.
Because his first instinct is to assume he's not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And to lock them in with him.
Yeah. It's not...
because obviously they've witnessed too much. They've seen their friend be murdered, so whatever robbery they were going to do pales in comparison to murder.
Yeah.
Scary.
And, you know, in the sort of shuffle here, Jane Levy finds the money. He realizes that she's taken the money. He's super pissed about that. But, like, more importantly, there is still something in the house that he doesn't want them to find out about. And while they're trying to escape through the basement, they come across a girl chained up! a fucking prisoner in the basement, and her setup is crazy. She's got like a whole bunch of pillows everywhere.
It's definitely just couch cushions, which is looted from the neighborhood.
Right? Like, it's definitely couches that have been thrown out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It provides soundproofing for sure. It also makes it a little comfier for her. This time around, I noticed that the overhead lights are probably that LED that mimics sunlight, so that way she's getting vitamin D. And there's a fuck ton of plants.
There are plants down there.
For oxygen. Which is crazy.
Is it for oxygen?
I mean, probably. Like, that's why you have plants, right?
I think you need a lot of plants to make enough oxygen to make it justified.
I'm sure every little bit helps. And maybe he's just trying to make it a little more comfortable.
I think he was trying to make it a little homey. I don't know.
It's fucking wild. They decide they can't leave this girl behind. They're going to take her with them. But as they're escaping, he sort of like meets them at the side gate door, shoots at them. But, you know, he's blind. He doesn't know what he's shooting at. And he kills the girl that was chained up. This is the other brilliant moment in this movie, right?
And another surprising reaction.
Yeah, because he starts freaking out like he's just shot somebody that he loves. He's crying. Like, he's over her body wailing. Like, why did you make me do this? And it's just genius storytelling, guys. The writing in this movie is so fucking good. Like, it just ratchets the tension up constantly. Every time they're trying to escape, there's like there's another obstacle in the way. And every time we think we have this character figured out, there's just like a new revelation that makes him weirder and more evil. And you go from being mildly sympathetic to this guy to realizing like how bad of a villain he is. Like, he's maybe a good guy.
It's a bit of a roller coaster. I think there's a bit of shock and awe with his level of badness, but oh god, I'm not gonna defend him. I'm just gonna stop right now.
You don't have to defend him. Don't Breathe 2 does all of that for you. It's fine. There's a whole other movie out there if you want to see him as a sympathetic character.
That's one thing though that I love about the two movies as a pairing, mm-hmm. because they are like the yin and yang of each other, and it feels like they were both an exercise in how can we make the audience change who they root for.
Yeah.
Both films, yes. In a different way. Like, in this film, they make Stephen Lang this terrible character who's got really interesting bad guy plans. And then in the second one, it's like, okay, now we've made him so despicable. How do we get the audience to root for him again? Like, yeah. What is worse than this?
You just find a villain that's worse than him. And that's kind of what they're doing here, right?
Yeah, finding a villain that's worse than robbers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It is so great because you never know whose side you're on for so much of the movie. And even when you realize like the full scope of his depravity, you're like, well, there's a hint of humanity in him. It's crazy. He's gone way off the deep end, but it's such an American walk toward insanity. Like, his daughter dies, and we learn from newspaper clippings that the woman who killed his daughter, it was vehicular manslaughter. Like, this woman accidentally ran over his daughter, I'm assuming, and she got off scot-free. She was found not guilty. His explanation later is that rich girls don't go to jail, so he's kidnapped her, and he decided that, like, you killed my... Oh, man. So, like, we should also explain that in this moment, while he's saying all of this, he's got Jane Levy strapped up in the basement just like this other girl. He thinks he's killed everybody. He's knocked her out. When she comes back to consciousness, she's in the same sort of weird strap setup that this girl chained in the basement was. He's putting a pan on a heating element. He's opening a fridge and taking stuff out.
Can we just go quick through this? Like, can you stop taking so much pleasure in retelling?
I love how much this makes everybody squirm. None of us saw this coming. And in the movie theater, the entire audience went, oh, good God, no.
I don't think I've been as surprised in a movie theater ever. Ever.
God, I love this movie. So yeah, he's heating up a big old jar of his own semen, because he explains that he had gotten her pregnant. He's got this huge turkey baster full of semen that he's also going to try and, you know, artificially inseminate Jane Levy with, because...
Gross, 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 gross.
They took my daughter, and I thought it was only fair that they give me one back, you know? Like, God damn! The scales of justice are not weighed properly, and he's just trying to even everything back out. It's... insane. Like, this is some frontier level justice.
He starts with, I'm not a rapist.
I never forced myself on her.
Oh, God.
That turkey baster is living rent-free in the minds of everybody that saw this movie in the theater, man.
God.
What a great movie. I love movies that make audiences feel or do something. Like, whether you're outraged.
Because you're together in that moment.
Yes!
You're never as united as you are when everybody is so disgusted that they can't contain themselves.
God, I love it. Oh, it's the best. Like, it's gross. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it is super gross.
Oh,
it makes
disgusting.
Me squirm. I'm like, ugh.
It's disgusting. I could not watch it. Like, I was gagging.
Yeah.
In my sunny, beautiful living room.
I fucking love it. That is why I go to movies, especially movies in the theater. You're more often to get the real dark version of that. It's like a rape sequence. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, and we did this extra long so you can feel the gravity of the situation. Like, I don't want to. Like, that I really don't want to.
Turkey baster gets the point across.
Gets it across pretty quick. Oh, man. Yeah, everybody in the theater, just like waves of groans and people chatting with each other. And like, they knew exactly what they were doing. They made this movie specifically for that live audience reaction. It's a visceral movie from start to finish, whether it's the anxiety of hiding in the shadows from this guy who's hunting you, or just trying to get the fuck out of the scene as fast as possible. This movie plays an audience like a goddamn orchestra. It's genius.
Well, because also simultaneously too, Alex has come back in after having left. He had jumped the fence. He was ready to go. And he hears the guns go off. He hears that Money's been killed and is confirmed by text between the two of them in the dark. But he gets caught by Stephen Lang and he gets assaulted terribly. His face punched. He gets thrown into a washing machine. And then we think he gets impaled by gardening shears. And there's a great reveal during this crazy ass turkey baster sequence where we see that he actually accidentally stabbed the body. He stabbed
Money. Yeah.
And Alex is still, he's still clinging
he's
on.
He's hanging in there.
He can only see out of half an eye, but he is still alive.
Yeah, he gets them out, and so, you know, he dies in the process. He gets shot when they
it's
get
so
to
It's so sad, because you know the second he changes his mind and he goes back in
you know he's
to
dead.
Save Rocky that he's condemned himself.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's dying for this girl that doesn't even want him.
And the other big bonus of this movie is that they never kill the dog. Like, they put that dog in so much danger, and he's such a good boy.
I love how many times they overlay growling on him, but you can totally see his tail wagging.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm listening to my stay command. I'm being a good boy.
I'm gonna get a treat in a minute as soon as they call cut.
I'm gonna jump in this trunk and get so many scridges.
Even when he's like crawling through the like the air ducts and
his
stuff,
his tail is wagging.
He's like, but like, yeah, they make him sound way, way meaner than he actually is.
Yeah, when
is.
We get those growly close-up shots, he's a slobbery, scary mess. But yeah, anytime he's far away, you see the tail flipping.
Yeah, so when Jane Levy tries to escape, she ends up trapping him in the trunk of a car, which is a great sequence. These sequences are always great, right? Where people have to use the resources around them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's kind of the beauty of any sort of single location locked in movie. You get that 100 times over and over. You're always sort of just like problem solving and dealing with stuff that's in your environment. I mean, it's a movie, so I mean, you can make anything happen as long as you can justify it.
Because you're both the one putting them in that situation and giving them the tools to get out of it. But
yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I see
yeah,
what
yeah.
you mean.
For her character, too, it's maybe something that she would think of because she has this big emotional arc talking about being locked in the trunk by her mother when her mother was drunk, so like she would think to maybe go into the trunk. There's even a moment where she's got to crawl into the trunk and you can tell she doesn't like it at all. But that's how she traps the dog.
I just love that Stephen Lang is ahead of them every step of the way.
Oh,
whenever
yeah.
they think that they've got him like locked up or knocked out, or they're just enough ahead that they can get this door unlocked or this cellar unlocked and get out, he's already on the other side of the door.
Yep.
It's brutal in that way that, and I said this earlier, is that every time you think there's a bit of a win, somebody gets punched in the face.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he has...
Or shot in the face.
He has so much more to lose here. The funny thing is that the $1 million that they find, I mean, it's close to $1 million. I don't know exactly how much it is. That's so low on the scale of things that he's willing to lose. He's fine to lose the $1 million, but he can't let this girl leave. And then she dies, and it's like, well, I can't let them find out about this girl. And also, I need a new girl. And, you know, like, the money means nothing to him compared to everything
else. I think also, too, once Money has been killed, it's already gone too far.
Money the character.
Yeah, once there's a body on the scene, the cops will have to get involved.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly, too, why he's pissed. Because it's like, what the fuck am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And also, too, if there are more people in the house, I have to kill them.
Yeah.
Because they've witnessed their friend be murdered.
Well, he's going to let Money leave at first. He's like, okay, I'll just let this guy go. It's not worth it.
He hasn't seen anything.
He says that he's been in the basement and that he's seen it. And he's pretty
certain
maybe
he hasn't. Oh, yeah,
because
he's like, I know what you're keeping in the basement because he thinks the money's down there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he hasn't been down there yet. And ultimately, yeah, he kills him because he decides that it's not worth the risk. And then also he might come back anyway. And yeah, it's that thing where you're trapped in a situation that you can't get out of. And he's digging himself a deeper and deeper hole. And they do a pretty good job of sort of, like, building Rocky's character, like, why she can't let go of the money. Because there are plenty of opportunities where Alex tries to convince her to just arm the system, let the alarms go off, and have the cops show up. Because, like...
He's murdered and kidnapped a woman.
Exactly. Like oh, no, we came in here to steal some money? Who fucking cares? They're going to sweep that under the rug. We'll probably be heroes. Or either that or they just won't mention it. We're going to help save a girl, maybe. She ends up dying, so that goes out the fucking window. But yeah, the end of this movie is great because we see Jane Levy escape. Rocky gets out. We fast track all the way to the airport. She's with her little sister. They're on their way to California. There's a news report on the TV. Oh, the man that she thought she'd killed after she, you know, beat the shit out of him, knocked him down a flight of stairs into the basement. Made him eat his own semen. When she stuffs that turkey baster in his own mouth, it is so funny. but he's alive. And he had hidden the body of the girl that had been killed already. She's sort of like in an empty cistern filled with boiler water under the floor. And, you know, the police are essentially heralding him as a bit of a suburban hero here.
He defended his home against two attackers.
Yeah, blind veteran defends himself against two attackers. And nothing was reported stolen. He's not looking directly in the camera because he is blind and he doesn't know what's going on, but he's staring right into that fucking, like, right into Jane Levy's eyes, like, I'm coming for you, bitch. Which is what we all thought the sequel was gonna be. We all thought that he was gonna, like, hunt her down in California, and they took such a left turn. But goddamn, you know, as much as I like Don't Breathe 2, it pales in comparison to Don't Breathe.
I was gonna ask you, because I know how much you love Don't Breathe 2, if one still pulls out ahead, but
oh yeah,
you just answered that. So.
Yeah, so Don't Breathe 2 is like a great rug pull, and it's hilarious in a way because they're making you side with somebody that you already don't like. It's just like such an exercise of writing yourself into a corner and figuring out how to get the fuck out of it. But Don't Breathe has the best sequences of these two movies.
It's like, just such a roller coaster of reveals and layers. This movie is an onion.
Absolutely. God, I like it. Now, do you feel like it's easier to watch every time? Like, do you think a third time around you won't have as much, your heart won't be beating out of your chest?
Yeah, I think now that I'm more familiar with the plot, and this watch too, I will say, was a lot easier than the theater because I didn't know what was going on, and it was just anxiety-inducing.
Well, the sound in the theater, too, the way they suck sound out of sequences and stuff.
It's just such a tense movie, and that's to the film's credit.
Hell yeah.
It's absolutely to the film's credit. I do prefer to watch this movie at home. If it went back
into
the theaters,
lights on.
If it went back into the theaters, I would be very hesitant to come with you. I know you would see it.
Absolutely, I would.
I would be very hesitant.
Oh, that's good to hear.
We'd probably make a handshake deal that I could go to the concession stand during the semen scene.
I think you'll see a lot of people like, I'm just going to go.
Gotta go pee.
Anybody need anything? You guys good? The entire theater fucking empties out.
Just a procession of people after that scene walking in with bags of popcorn.
And then maybe realizing they're 30 seconds too soon. Like, I forgot something. I'll be right back.
Oh, fuck.
That's funny. I love that you're like, A+, please never show it to me again. God, I love Fede Alvarez.
He's such a good director.
Right?
So good.
Yeah. No, we need more movies from him, that's for sure. And like the entire team, like everybody that sort of like came with him to Hollywood and has gone on to do more stuff. As much as maybe you don't love Don't Breathe 2 or the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, like there are choices and aspects of all of those movies that are just so unique and just chef's kiss. So great.
Okay, John, so I'm going to guess you're going to go with a 4 out of 4 on this one.
Yeah. like there's a moment toward the end where I'm like, we've lost a little bit of the steam just like in the back and forth of it all, but it's needed. And like, yeah, I love this fucking movie. This is a 4 out of 4.
Yeah, man. I have such a hard time giving it a 4 out of 4 because it makes me so uncomfortable.
Take your heart out of the equation.
It's so
put it in a box and give me the brain rating.
It's so well written and it's like just a good, solid film, but it squicks me out too much.
Okay.
I have to give it a 3.5 out of 4, John.
Okay, demerits for squick?
I had to give it a squick drop.
This movie gives you the ick? Don't say that.
It does give me the ick.
Ah, I don't buy it. This feels like...
It's great. It's great. It makes me uncomfortable.
This is not nice. This is not right.
We've always rated based on our hearts, John.
Take your finger off the fucking scale, you loser. I want an honest rating out of you. Okay, fine. 3.5 out of 4. That's still pretty respectable. It's the difference between great and killer. I think we're doing okay. We're big fans of this movie, whether or not it squicks us out. We'd love to hear what you think of Don't Breathe, and definitely Don't Breathe 2. I mean, honestly, if you're a fan of Don't Breathe 2, you've got a friend in me. let's talk about how crazy that movie is over in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord.
We'll be back at you again next week with another 2016 summer blockbuster, a spooky one.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Get ready to scream, shiver, and maybe even lose a little sleep. It's time for Nightmare on Film Street's 31-Day Horror Challenge. 31 horror movies, 31 days, 31 chances to win a spooktastic prize pack to help keep Halloween alive 365.
This year's prize pack includes goodies from Nightmare on Film Street's new upcoming book, Cocktails from the Crypt, 4K remastered copies of Demons and Demons 2, a Stephen King Blu-ray box set, Spirit Halloween lunchboxes, pumpkin carving kits, Halloween CD soundtracks, including the long out-of-print Monsters Speak, Nightmare on Film Street sticker packs, and more.
The rules are simple. Head over to nofspodcast.com/Halloween. Download the 31-Day Horror Challenge Movie Guide and post your Halloween watch list on social media using the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge to make this Halloween a night you'll never forget.
That's nofspodcast.com/Halloween and the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge.
What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktail recipes. Created by us, your favorite podcasters and all-around weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, and Blackwell's. Or just head to nofspodcast.com/go for the links.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Join us!
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.